8:07, FM Talk 106.5, and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Phone number, text line 343-0106. Coming up this hour, I got a lot of texts too. I was talking about 13 years since Hurricane Katrina and kind of the story here along the Alabama Gulf Coast. And I think it's interesting too, somebody had said in the text line, and that was in my show notes this morning, as I mentioned, you know, the national narrative just forgets about the Mississippi coast, and it's all focused just on New Orleans. At the same time, you look at the story of two counties, Mobile County way more affected than Baldwin County. But we'll talk about that. Also, of course, Drag Queen Story Hour, the subject du jour yesterday for the Mobile City Council. We'll talk about that some more as well. It is a day after Election Day. No, not here in the state of Alabama, but across that lotto line into Florida as they were voting in the primaries yesterday. And to talk more about this with us, it's Breitbart and Lanyap and Yellowhammer News and my buddy Jeff Poor's time to fill us in. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. So help us here look across. I mean, I'm a little bit embarrassed. I have some knowledge of Florida politics, but being in a neighboring state, I should have more. But watching the results this morning, Tallahassee mayor, where you live now, Tallahassee, Andrew Gilliam has won the Democrat nomination in the quest to become governor there. He's going to be running against whom? And tell me about both candidates.
So Andrew Gilliam's, this was a big upset last night. This was the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez sort of thing, but with a Florida version of it.
Meaning the Democrat social, I mean, being far-left Democrat.
Yeah, he wasn't expected. He had been polling in the teens all along, wasn't really taken seriously, and it was just hard to see where his votes were going to come from. The Democratic establishment candidate was Gwen Graham. She's a former congresswoman from that area around Tallahassee. And she, her father was a senator and governor of Florida. He was thought to be kind of the person that was going to win. There were some others that might have been contenders. The mayor of Miami Beach was running. I think there was an Orlando businessman. But the thing was, Andrew Gilliam wasn't given much of a shot, and no one knew where his votes were going to come from. But he really, there at the end, was able to kind of win that banner of being the progressive candidate, being the obviously he's kind of running on a socialist platform, but he wasn't running like as a socialist. He just had the backing of the Bernie Sanders. He had a lot of these groups that are funded by George Soros backing him, and he was proudly taking their money. So I think that just tells you on that side just kind of where the enthusiasm is in the Democratic Party. Now, on the Republican side, it's an interesting story as well. There are two candidates vying for it. It was the winning candidate is Ron DeSantis. He was very early on kind of thought of as a long shot. But what really put him over the edge was Donald Trump. Donald Trump endorsed him early, kind of hit an endorsement back in December, but gave a full-fledged, all-out endorsement in June. And that after that endorsement, DeSantis shot way above Anna Putnam in the polls and had a double-digit lead throughout. Adam Putnam was kind of the establishment guy. He was backed by Big Sugar. He was backed by the Chamber of Commerce and all these sort of, what you expect establishment-type Republican candidates to get the support of. But that was really the fight. At the end of the day, DeSantis just – it was never enough for Adam Putnam to overcome the Trump endorsement, which I think is telling about you know, where all the enthusiasm in the Republican Party is right now.
And it does lay out a pretty big divide between the two candidates running for governor. I mean, it won't be, versions of the same person.
Yeah, it's the matchup we want. We want to see this sort of proxy fight between the populist movement in the Democratic Party versus the populist movement in the Republican Party. I think that's – now, that may not be what the general election voters want, but – the general election voters don't determine who gets the nomination. It's the grassroots, it's the base that determines who gets the party's nomination, and you get the two heavyweights, and we really have this ideological warfare I think we're going to see unfold in Florida through November.
So both party structures basically didn't get their person. Republicans and Democrats didn't get their person. The upstarts get it. And you mentioned an email to us, could this be a preview of 2020? And I think about that because depending on what conspiracy theory you believe or don't believe, it could have been Bernie Sanders versus President Trump. And like you said, quite correctly, I'd say you're looking at the populist version from both parties, not the establishment. So do you think 2020 could be a populist Democrat running against a populist Republican for all the marbles?
I think so, and I don't think it's going to be a Bernie Sanders per se, but I do think that Kamala Harris or a Cory Booker or a candidate like that really has a shot at it. And now, with that being said, I think Joe Biden could run in that mold as well for president in 2020 and run as the populist and kind of split the difference and get the establishment voters and the, you know, we always talk about the superdelegates in the Democratic Party. The Democrats have a little more control in their party than the Republicans do, determining who is the ultimate nominee with a, you know, their superdelegate structure. And that lends itself to more of an establishment-type candidate coming out. Now, that wasn't the case at all in 2008 with Barack Obama, but I do think that we could very well see that populist fervor take over and have a Democrat kind of running on that and you know, winning those early primary states like Iowa and New Hampshire.
All right, let's bring it back home to Alabama, and I'm gonna play the audio of this. And the audio doesn't, it's more of a visual and an audio of Governor Kay Ivey being asked about a debate here that has started people talking. Here's the audio from one of the clips.
So you are open to the possibility of the debate?
Time is, we just got to, yeah, I mean, we're going to do what's pressing most right now, and that's creating jobs and dealing with the air show and putting folks back to work.
Okay, so this has been brought back up, as you write here, and the video being pushed out by Democrats of Governor Ivey pausing to answer that question.
Her look like she's not quick, and she's, you know, a little slow and elderly, I think. I think that's the intended purpose of really pushing this out. But what I'll say is, my impression of that, if you look at it in its full context, is that Kay Ivey's just amazed that they're asking her that question once again, and that we're back to the debate.
Well, okay, but I would, if I'm running her campaign, I've heard what you said on it, and you know, why should she? But at the same time, she needs a good comeback, right? I mean, that's something that you should go over. You sit down and have a sandwich with Governor Ivey if you run the campaign. Say, okay, when you're asked this, you know, make sure, I mean, not putting words in her mouth, but what do you think? And then craft that into a slug line. It's something to what was it this morning? Talk about clap back?
Yes.
Clap back.
Something to clap back with.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism, but I do wonder, like, you're down by, let's say, 20 points, I think, the most. You know, but the best poll for Walt Maddox shows him down by 20. Is this really what's going to do KIVN, this debate thing? And we, you know, she could have handled it better. I absolutely agree with that. But I do think that by just prolonging this whole discussion about a debate, it's not really doing the Democrat any favors right now.
I think it's safe to say that this, close to the next election, everything is fair game. And I think, as you're saying, and Sean, you're alluding to, having a great communications director as someone who would remind her, just in case you're in a certain predicament, be prepared. Be prepared to have a standard answer, because otherwise, every shift to the left and to the right is going to be used by the other side as an aha moment, a gotcha moment. And I think that once November... Go ahead.
What I would say to that is, yeah, it's fair. I think everything's absolutely fair game. I just don't think it's a good tactic. I don't think it's going to be what is going to make up the difference that Walt Maddox needs. And I think at some point you get to the law of diminishing returns, and it just looks like you're picking on Meemaw.
Right.
And people will push back against that. It's not doing him any favors. So, you know, the merits of the debate, that's all fine. We've had that discussion. We've litigated it. Should she debate or should she not? And it's absolutely fair game, but is just because it's by virtue of being fair game doesn't mean it's the best tactical move.
Agreed, and I also think that you have to be very careful. Obviously, he is a man, she's a woman, and she's a bit older, that if someone thinks that he and his campaign are picking on her for being an elderly woman and being a woman, then of course he can face backlash, and what the margin that we see now can widen. So, you know, it's anyone's guess until we get to November the 6th.
And what I would say real quick is, you know, as I sit here in traffic in Birmingham, there's a lot of things the Maddox campaign could go after Kay Ivey for that they're not really doing. They are trying to over-weaponize this debate thing, and I just, to me, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be what wins the day.
Yeah, it's, I think the same thing. I think it's probably a loser for them. But I wonder what the motivation is here. Looking at the state, looking at the polling, look at the way people have voted in the past, are we looking at a situation where Maddox is using this, his campaign using this, to motivate Democrats to turn out to vote? Or is he using this to try to convince somebody who would have voted for Ivey to cross over? Because I think, I mean, there's, I think there's, maybe there are legions of people that still hadn't made a decision, but I think most of the state that's going to show up on November 6th probably pretty much knows who they're going to vote for governor as it stands now, unless something major happens.
So being persuasive with...
Yeah, I mean, are you trying to persuade your party, you know, to make sure they all show up, or are you trying to convince somebody to vote differently?
Let's consider this, that if you're a Democrat in Alabama, you are going to need Republican voters to come to your side. And, you know, winning the base over, I like you said, I think a lot of this is already baked in. If you're running as a Democrat, you've got to look at a way to kind of chip away at some of those Republican voters, get some of those voters in the suburbs and places that went for Doug Jones against Roy Moore, even though it's a totally different race. Those are your prospective voters. Those are the ones, that's your target audience. And to me, the debate question doesn't really do much there. I think you've got to find something else to go after her on, and the debate isn't going to do be what does the trick.
There it is. Jeff, as always, we appreciate your time. People want to read more about what you're watching here in the state of Alabama or some insight into what's going on in Florida. How do they find you?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_4.
All right. There he is. I also hear him hosting radio shows all over the state of Alabama. We'll talk more about that coming up in the future. He's doing great, great work. I told him to stay away from the radio business, but for some reason, he doesn't listen. It is throwing himself into the mix. 8:19, coming right back. We'll take your calls. We'll talk lotto. We'll talk drag queen story hour. Lots of stuff on the way. Y'all stay close. Thank you, Kane. 80 now at FM Talk 106.5. Thunderstorms in the mix today, says Dr. Bill. More with him coming up at 8:35. All right, grab some phone calls and text at 343-0106, 343-0106. 13 years since landfall for Hurricane Katrina. Do you remember where you were? I'm talking about this morning. I had the kind of memory hit me yesterday driving out to driving Bitten Spur to Airport Boulevard on that section of Bitten Spur that's between University and Airport, heading out for a big kid's birthday dinner. And as we've been lampooning on Twitter this morning, so yes, my children's birthdays are within 3 days of each other, 5 years apart. But 3 days, and no, we did not plan it that way.
But it makes shopping easier.
It does, but it, you know, like I try the group birthday things, that does not work. So yeah, but we did have the first part of it was a group dinner with grandparents and stuff last night. And, you know, I was thinking about this. I was driving that section of Bitten Spur heading west, and there I was 13 years ago heading out there because my daughter, who was supposed to be born in October, came early and with the onslaught of Katrina. So I mean, it's like I have silver linings here to this, and I'm going to read through some of these texts. I have friends that moved because of losing their homes on the Mississippi coast in St. Bernard Parish, moved over here to Alabama that I wouldn't be friends with, but that doesn't lessen the impact. Also talked about the subtleties that we get here that are not a part of the national narrative. You know, Mississippi Gulf Coast, they are the ones who took it the worst in Katrina. Now, death toll in New Orleans, absolutely. But that was something that was caused by man-made failure of levees flooding the city and people didn't evacuate. The actual storm surge, what the storm did, if you spent any time on the Mississippi Gulf Coast after Katrina, you know what I'm talking about. Not just the houses right on the water, mm-hmm. blocks and blocks inland. I'm talking about wiped out.
Man.
And we saw it here, too, in places like the Bayou, the Bayou LeBatre, Coden saw it. Of course, Dolphin Island, up and down both sides of the bay, flooding even on the western side of Baldwin County. Places that had not gotten water in them in the past, getting water in them. But it is interesting in the subtlety. There's one subtlety is Mississippi Coast that we get in southwest Alabama getting it. That's not part of the national narrative. Same time in our area, and I saw some people posting about this, I think either on the text line or on my Twitter feed, the difference between Mobile County and Baldwin County. It was, well, Ivan, which had preceded Katrina, right, 2003 was Ivan, I think, and then Katrina 2 years later. But Ivan really did a number. Pensacola, of course, and Gulf Shores, Orange Beach. It wasn't as bad in Mobile County. Katrina was a similar deal. Still plenty bad for people. And I mean, the storm surge went as far as Waterville, I think, in Baldwin County.
Oh, wow.
But it was not near the damage that Mobile County had. I know that my daughter was born, and my best friend, he lives in Daphne, and he drove over to see the new addition, mm-hmm. and talking about what he was doing. They still had power on, I think. In his area in Baldwin County, where we were, you know, wiped clean in Mobile. Just that separation made a difference. Like Ivan was the other way. East was way worse than West. And Katrina, Mobile County definitely took it on the chin worse.
And Ivan was a year prior. It was in 2004.
Four, not three.
A year before Katrina made landfall.
I think that these storms, especially when you're from here, you have a different vantage point of it because you're on the front lines, right? But I know I was living overseas at the time and I just had my newest addition as well, August 14th. And so you feel bad, you see the pictures, and that's kind of the extent of it. But not until you put boots on the ground yourself mm-hmm. can you understand. Because I promise you, I remember watching the coverage and thinking, man, how close do these people live to the water?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see how some counties were not close to the water,
mm-hmm.
but how that tremendous destruction which happened, it just gives you a new appreciation for people who say, you know what, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to help rebuild this town, rebuild this city. I want to pour more into the local economy. And so we're very big in the Finley household about supporting local for things like this.
Yeah, well, we were talking about that earlier in the show, how many people along the Gulf Coast remember being part of these organizing efforts where people here in Alabama were helping out, people in Mississippi and Louisiana and people from different states were helping out. Just even the federal government fumbling through their response at first, but the local folks mm-hmm. just loading up trunks. I mean, doing it onesie-twosies or organizing, loading up full trucks, really was a great response. And yeah, you mentioned something about the child. I'm probably outside the statute of limitations, so I can say this now, that they were ready after my daughter was born to clear us to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept telling my wife, I said, hey, tell them you're still not feeling good. Tell them this and that. I said, well, I'm running generator at the house. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, run that on one refrigerator. I've got a fan, you know, doing this and that, and that's it. Y'all need to stay here. So they kept, you know, because they, in a priority list, in a triage list, they get the power back on at the hospital. And y'all are going to say, well, what weren't there generators? There were generators, but there was no air conditioning on the maternity floor.
Mm.
No, Eric, that's a whole other story for another show. But I said, yeah, stay here so you keep the air conditioning and the TV because they get the power company responds and gets the hospitals back on
mm-hmm.
first. Looking at the text line here, today, there we go. Donnie and my daughter share the same birthday. Today is my 49th birthday. It's also the day 13 years ago we lost our home in Biloxi, mm-hmm. my parents' house in Pascagoula, my in-laws' house in Gulfport. We are stronger because of it. So, I mean, that's, you know, I told the story of my buddy in Pascagoula, what he dealt with, and he was way back inland. So many people texting in about this. We'll talk about where you were and memories from back then, 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And I love this. Ben is sending in some before and after pictures of the storm damage, some of the stuff that happened around his area there in Point Clear. So this is pretty cool pictures coming in on the text line.
He's a great photographer. There's mm-hmm. from Ben, there's a picture of as Katrina made approach on that Sunday hanging up in our house from the day before my daughter was born. And thanks, Kane. 835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here. We'll grab some phone calls and text. And also, if we get a little chance here, we can revisit the Drag Queen Story Hour, but we're talking about where you were Katrina 13 years ago and a benchmark around here. Frederick was a benchmark for me, of course, but for a lot more folks, Katrina, that benchmark, that big storm that defines things. So the way we used to talk about, and still do to some degree, I was talking about it yesterday, about pine trees with a buddy of mine, you know, where there used to be trees and not. It was the before and after Frederick conversation. But Katrina, the same for so many people, and even bigger as so many people completely lost their homes on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. You know, we had that text from Donnie a second ago, and Donnie not by himself in that. Here's Phil says, try living with your new bride in a small cramped apartment. rent, me being new to the city with no power and not heeding the call to buy gas or supplies, Hugh, the heat outside, and the new wife stewing inside with no power or amenities. Yeah, that could get tough there. And look at there, Daniel, his grandson, was born on the 28th, 13 years ago, rode the storm out there. Yeah, that was the thing. I tried to keep the missus and my new addition at the hospital as long as possible. I said, y'all do not want to go back to the house. You don't stay. Please stay in the hospital.
If you keep mentioning that, you're going to get another bill mailed to you from the hospital.
Yeah, because they listen.
Right.
I don't know, but there was no air conditioning during the birth, so they're probably not going to bring that back up with us.
I wonder how many people named their children Katrina.
And we were asked, oh my gosh, were we asked... the nurses who were fantastic on the floor were like, are you a neighbor, Katrina? No, we're not.
How about Kat?
Yes, no.
And, well, you were talking about your daughter born during Katrina, but I wonder, and I'd like to go back and check out the stats, around 9 months after Katrina made landfall, I wonder if there was a rise in births in Mobile, Baldwin County, all along the Gulf Coast.
Which is sad that, we talk about this, that there's a snowstorm somewhere or something like that. That's all it takes if there's a computer or TV, then that's not happening. But as soon as that's gone, that's happening.
You know what you're doing? You're making people have to count backward and then figure out their birthday, and they're like, ew.
Greg says here, one of the more interesting things I saw after Katrina was a hotel that was just to the right of I-10 diagonally across from the Beau Rivage was spray painted 5 or 6 stories up on the outside wall. It said, Mom, I'm all right.
Wow.
Oh, that gives you the chills.
Eric says, I never forget the 8-year-old little boy who came up to my tent to collect toiletries in D'Iberville. Said, I'd been saving my football that I brought along until I spotted a special kid. He nonchalantly told me that his house went away with the hurricane. I asked him if he wanted the football and his face lit up. I don't know who wanted to cry more, me or his grandmother.
Oh, why are you doing this to us?
Those are some of the stories from the aftermath of Katrina.
You know what? I went to New Orleans a few years later, and people were pointing to the buildings and the line there, the water line.
Flood line, yeah.
And it was so hard to believe that water went up that high, and that is at the 9th Ward.
It was there for
a conference. It just, and the smell in the city was something that I'll never forget. And that was so many years later.
And it's, but it was one of these things that absolutely tragic story for New Orleans, and that was focused on nationally. I just always push for the Mississippi Gulf Coast and places like St. Bernard Parish, Louisiana, because I don't think they get the attention for what they really took it out. I mean, the storm surge, unbelievable.
Why
in those
do you
places.
Think that, though? Why do
because
you...
it's an easier story to tell nationally. People know New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to tell that story. There was probably easier time. I mean, I think it was easier for them to get reporters in there, get them places they could do that. You know, I make fun of the reporters that do a stand-up, standing in the water. They get waiters.
Your favorite.
Everybody loves that stand-up. You'll see reporters always go get in the water for their live shot, even though they could stand like 5 feet away and be on land. Whether it's a flooding on the Mississippi story or it's a storm story or they're always standing in the water. I think it was easier for them to make TV out there, and I think the intended or unintended consequence of that is that the nation, we do down here, the nation doesn't know how bad it was for folks on the Mississippi coast. All right, let's go to the phones here at 343-0106, and Dan is in Daphne. Hey, Dan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, a couple of things. We had just, in March, brought home a daughter from Ukraine, and she wasn't quite 2 yet. So even though we were away from the possibilities of the storm in Daphne, we chose to leave just for the noise and you know how scary hurricanes are. And we were in the lobby in Tallahassee, and the people sitting there watching their homes go away, and the sorrow and the heartache that was in that building. And then a few days later, I had a friend of mine couldn't find her grandparents, and they actually lived in what became the pile of rubble just outside of Beau Rivage, and the water came in and basically floated those houses, and when it set them back down, they just fell into a bunch of sticks. And we found her grandparents, very elderly grandparents, sitting on a curb in front of what used to be their house with a baseball hat and a picture frame, which was their total possession, and washing their socks in a muddy bucket of water. It was really sad when you saw it up close.
There it is. Those stories are so many. stories from back then. And hopefully those are things of the past, and people are recovering that can with their lives. I know there are a lot of people here. I mean, look at the text line. Look at the personal friends of mine that are here and living in our area because they said, you know, I lost that house and I'm not going back. Let's go to Danny in Robertsdale, wants to talk some gubernatorial politics. Hey, Danny. Danny, go at once. You know, we've been having. I will put it on hold because we had trouble yesterday with line one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was.
Go back to.
I will go ahead and tell you. Yesterday, that was totally on your phone screener, and whoever that was needs to be fired.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I'm talking about myself because I put the wrong name up there, and that does happen on occasion.
Well, while we're waiting for Danny or whomever else is going to pop on the line, let me ask you this: for those of you who have lived through a hurricane, when bad storms come, do you get those butterflies? Are you concerned that oh no, this could be another one? Oh no, you know, we could see a ton of destruction? Or do you push forward and say, we know what happens here on the Gulf Coast and we're ready?
Yeah, it's part of life for me. I mean, you know, and not in a flippant way, but you've commented before, I'm fairly nonchalant about it.
You are.
I mean, there are things I have to do, and you'll see me go into a mode of getting things done, responsibilities for property, also this radio station. So. But you don't go running around like you're in a Godzilla movie or anything. You just kind of get it done.
And it helps to have lived through these because then you know.
Right.
And I can't. I mean, I haven't been on the coast for any of these hurricanes, big hurricanes that have come through. I've been up in Clark County, Alabama, which
you get a bunch of tornadoes up there. You get trees down. Yep. I've watched Clark County get a bunch of damage from storms.
But it does. It's like you know what you need to do to prepare. You know what you did wrong that might make it a little bit more comfortable if the worst case scenario happens and you're without power, or if you lose trees that, you know, you know what to expect a little bit more when you live through something like this. And if you're somebody who tried to ride it out in a trailer or made a mistake in your preparation for one of the past ones, you might know, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to go a little bit further up the coast.
You know,
I can live the rest of my life never seeing a hurricane and being okay with that.
Yeah.
I'd birth another child before I would take on a hurricane.
Man, that's just... You just do it. Get through it.
You do it. You have a baby.
I can't do that. give me the hurricane any day.
Bambino.
Gamecock girl on the text line says, you're right. She says it's the same last year with Harvey. Houston got the attention for the aftermath flooding, but the town south of there had a direct hit with the Cat 4 hurricane, received no attention. We talked about them a good bit here, like Port Aransas and Corpus down there, but you're right. And national media did not get the attention. All right, let's go to the phones at 343-0106. And I am going to go, I'm going to skip around here and skip down to Pete in the Bayou because I like to talk to Pete in the Bayou, and we're talking Katrina, and he's in the Bayou. So he goes first. Hey, Pete.
Hey, guys. It's kind of interesting when you compared the Aransas and such to Houston. It's all, if it hadn't have been for us putting all the shrimp boats in the trees, they wouldn't even have said that Alabama got hit.
Yeah, if there wasn't that, you know what? That goes back, Pete, to something that I said about New Orleans making it easy for a live shot. You know what? The shrimp boats pushed way inland there down at the bayou did make for, you're right. I mean, that's kind of, I don't want to sound cold about it, but it got attention because there was a visual to put out in national TV.
Absolutely. And another side note, I lived in a house that was built in 1906, and I didn't know it was a mobile home until Katrina hit.
I get that joke. Wow. And Pete, do you live in the same area now of the bayou?
No, I'm about 15 miles inland.
There.
But sidebar, though, my daughter swore that the middle bedroom upstairs was haunted, and I'm just wondering what happened to my ghost.
No, got maybe moved. Maybe moved to Birmingham. I don't know, Pete. Just appreciate the call. Let's go to Jay in Mobile next. Hey, Jay. Jay, I'm telling y'all don't believe me.
Okay.
There's something with line one. We're coming right back, Jay. I'm trying to get you on, and then all the other folks that are not on line one, like two and three and four and five, and we'll get to y'all coming up. Hold on. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. It's Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks, Kane. 848 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings. By the way, you check our website here. Number one, you got the three big things. In the story, Drag Queen Story Hour brings crowd with passionate comments to City Council. Mississippi Lottery Bill may be soon signed into law. And Fairhope names first woman as police chief. Hey, speaking of the Mississippi Lottery Law, we asked that question in the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. With Mississippi moving towards a state lottery, is it time for Alabama to vote on having its own state lottery? Right now, 94% of y'all saying yes, Alabamians should vote on whether to have the lottery. All right, go back to your calls. We can talk about that some. We'll talk about that more on the midday. But right now, 13 years since landfall of Hurricane Katrina on the Gulf Coast. Talk about where you were and different memories of that. I want to go to, I'm going to jump around here, but I got to go to Buster in Mobile, because Buster, it says here, you were on Fort Morgan, on this day 13 years ago?
Yeah, well, I was at Hurricane Katrina, September 12th, 1979.
Wait, that's Katrina, that'd be, Katrina would be August 29th, 2005.
Frederick, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, Frederick. Yes. So you were, you stayed on
the beach house down at Fort Morgan.
You stayed during Frederick?
Yeah, I couldn't get out. I went down to board up my house and fiddle-forted around and heard a siren go by and messed around a little bit longer, and all the water came in and blocked all the roads, and that's where I was.
So, I mean, I've got to ask that one because, I mean, the winds, and I was a kid, I was seven, I think, but I remember the winds. I remember that noise, and I was in West Mobile, and I remember them howling. I wonder what they sounded like on the peninsula there.
Well, I said they clocked at 176, and my house is 9 feet off the ground, and the Gulf and the Bay connected about 1:30 in the afternoon, and the water came up 8 feet.
Wow, because that's
I've been over and kissed my butt goodbye for 8 hours.
Did you think? I mean, did you have that kind of? I don't know that I make it. Did you? I mean, did you have doubts whether you'd make it out alive?
Yeah, I did. Probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, I just went to sleep in a closet in about 6 inches of water.
Oh my goodness!
And woke up next morning, and the wind was still blowing about 30 or 40, but all the houses around me had disappeared.
But yours except was there,
except the two I built side by side, and swam out and made it to Fort Morgan, the fort, and Coast Guard helicopter came down and rescued me.
Wow.
You went to sleep in the closet. Did you put on a life vest by any chance?
No, I didn't. I was just mentally and physically just exhausted and said, hell with it.
Wow. What a story.
It's a long story. It was a great experience.
That's perspective.
Nowadays, hurricanes don't even bother me. I just go to sleep in them.
Yeah, go get in the closet, go, you know, pour some water in the closet, lay down, and you feel at home. Buster, thank you for your story, and
he's
that from
calm
Frederick.
About this.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's seen it. What's interesting, too, is to think about the storm surge issue that he was dealing with on Fort Morgan, like they dealt with on Dolphin Island, where the north end of the bay, Frederick did some draining of the bay, ran the water down and out of the bay on the north end. Let's go to Eddie next in Alberta. Hey, Eddie.
Good morning. If I could, I'd like to just chime in first on the hurricanes. The gentleman talking about Frederick, I was a student in Memphis of college. We watched as that storm rolled in, and we knew it was not good. We had a home down on Fort Morgan, little cottage up on fence post pilings, and sure enough, got down there, myself and a cousin, we camped out in a pup tent up near the highway, and 2 o'clock in the morning, I get up to go outside to use the restroom, and the water is just creeping right up in toward our tent. It's about 2 feet from our pup tent. Now, we're up near the highway, but there's no sand in.
Now, wait. Let me go back here for a second. So, y'all went down, is this before the storm hits, or what?
No, we went down about 3 days after it hit, and just to kind of assess the situation, I was 18, my cousin was 12, so we were just camping out in a pup tent, and 2 o'clock in the morning, the ocean, there's nothing to stop it, so the water's just creeping right up toward our tent, and we just grabbed everything up, threw it in the back seat of my little Volkswagen, and we headed out of there. We lost, it wiped it out. We built back, but then fast forward to Ivan. By this time, I'm living down in a community known as Mifflin, where I still live. And my wife and I, my stepson, we loaded up everything we had in a box Chevy, headed to Nashville after boarding up three homes. 2 o'clock in the morning, I can't sleep. So I come down to the lobby and I turn on the weather channel and the sky's going. Right now, the eye of Ivan is passing over this community. Let's see, MIF.
Oh, no, no.
Mifflin. And I'm going, oh, my God. The run upstairs, wake everybody up, we get in the car. It takes us about 16 hours because couldn't get back. I-65 was totally gridlock. Well, we get over on 31 going south. Well, there's trees all over the road.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was just a creeping crawl to get back to Baldwin County. Pitch black as we get here. We pull up into my neighborhood. It looked like an atom bomb had gone off. It was, bah. So I had my home and two other homes to help clean up. I was a teacher. That was my career. Anyway, 2 weeks of living out of an ice chest with floating cheese and sleeping on the back porch. It was horrible. But then the next year when Katrina came and the devastation it caused to the west of us, you know, I had to ask God to forgive me for the way I felt after Ivan. It was pretty bad. But the main reason I called today was, as a teacher of 37 years and working with children, I understand, yeah, as adults, people can choose to be whatever they want and live their lives however they choose. But children are so impressionable and so easily led astray, I guess, for lack of a better word. And we've got to be very, very careful what we say and do with our young children. Now, once they hit an age of whatever, 14, 15, 16, and they've seen enough of the world to kind of begin to sort things out, that's one thing. But I don't think putting little children and saying that this is okay, I question that. And I would ask anyone listening, would you take your child to hear this on September the 8th.
Okay, but I think that's one of the, you know, I said with my, you know, discussion of this, if it was compulsory, it'd be 100% slam dunk for me that I would be railing against this. But it's not. So it's, you know, it's on a Saturday. It's nothing that's compulsory at all. It's just happening. And so the people that are listening to you, Eddie, and nodding along with you, I don't think they're going to take their children there. You know, it's a non-issue. Right. It's like it never happened. Now, I understand people are talking about the national agenda and what's being moved here, but for me and my house, right, for my people, we're not going to be there, not going to be attending it. This is not part of the discussion with my children. So I don't see, and then Dalton and I were talking too. I mean, if somebody will say, well, people will take their children, but those are the same kind of people that this is obviously not an issue. So other parts of their life, they're doing it. Right. So it doesn't, I think it's the people that would nod along with you are not going to take their children. The people that would shake their head at you are, so it's really a non-starter.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing I would say, aren't our public libraries taxpayer funded?
They are, but here's the problem. Think about, do you want a situation where, you know, when I heard the library director speak yesterday, that's going to be the arbiter of who can, you know, hold an event or not in the library. You got to, I mean, if there's not a well-defined thing, then you've got somebody subjectively, and they say yes to this group, but no to that group, and then you have some federal lawsuit, and, you know.
And it's that whole censorship thing we're seeing on the national scene now with Facebook and Google and so forth, and I'm not at all for censorship. There are a lot of things I don't agree with, but the beauty of living in this country is everyone has the freedom to express themselves however they feel necessary. So, last thing, I want to shout out to my mom, 81 years old, for getting with Dr. Fred Wolf and helping bring this all to the fore.
Well, very good. Well, Eddie, I appreciate the call. And, you know, we mentioned, too, the protest will be going on starting at 10 on, and it's Saturday the 8th, so not this Saturday, a week from. And so it starts at 10. I think the reading you said starts at, it's noon or something. It's, to me, it's like the protest is a bigger story. I think there'll be way more people at a protest than will be at the drag queen story hour. Eddie, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I think so. And the event page for the drag queen story hour does say it starts at noon on Saturday, September 8th.
But I think he coined it correctly. The beauty of our country is we have choices. So if you weren't planning on going, enjoy your Saturday.
Yeah, if
and
it was
if you were, then enjoy the reading.
Oh, if it wasn't a choice thing, if they were requiring it, I would
That's
be losing
story.
My stinking mind.
But I think the families that take their families there are the families who are doing other things, as you said. I mean, so, I mean it is what it is.
By the way, Supermom, I get it. She and I are the same age. She said, with the anniversary of Frederick coming up, that's one that made an impression on me at age 7. I was 7 as well. We had no windows left and shingles being blown around inside our house.
Mm.
Wow. Wow, wow. And this one here, my sister and I fed the seagulls in our front yard the morning after Frederick. Huh? They lived in Jackson, Alabama. The seagulls were in their yard.